Hey gang, Kevin Strange here.
Jamie Daniels.
Listen, we're going to be radically changing the way the Patreon works in a few months, but for now, you come in at the $1 level, the $1 level, and you get access to all of my audiobooks, right?
Right.
You get Jorek and the Shaugus Steel, Jorek and the Swamp Phantoms of Vic. You get Cotton Candy.
McHumans. Humans Under the Bed.
You get
Computer Face.
And you get Holy Matrimony. These are hours and hours and hours of audiobooks. As if that wasn't enough, only for $1, and not a dollar each. It's a dollar a month. A dollar a month gets you access to all of that, plus the Overrun episodes of our sister podcast, Watching with Strangers. We do a weekly Overrun podcast every single week. You get a new episode of that show. It's ridiculous not to jump in, help us, support the podcast. We're trying to get 20 patrons in the month of May. And I promise you, in the next couple months, it's going to be worth it. We're going to convert this over. It's going to be a book club, gang. It's going to have merch. I'm going to be giving away t-shirts and buttons and stickers and novels, exclusive novellas and books from Kevin Strange. Just get in now. Get these cool podcasts and audiobooks and stick around because it's going to get only better.
Right? Travis is my sister.
All right, there you go.
Hey, Kevin. What do you want to do about this podcast intro?
For Reading to Strangers?
Yeah.
I was thinking we'd download this broody-ass music. Then you'd be like, Read to Strangers. I'd be like, I don't want to read to strangers. I'd be like, Read to Strangers. I'd be like, I don't want to read to strangers. Then I shoot myself in the head. Pow!
See, I was thinking more like Reading Rainbow's theme song.
Like, with LeVar Burton?
Yeah.
Like, take a look, it's in a book, that shit.
Yeah, but like, Reading to Strangers.
Reading to Strangers. Reading to Strangers. No, that's a terrible idea. Is peeing on another dude's poop gay?
Probably. I mean, like, because
you just left me a nugget in there.
Yeah.
When I went to pee in your bathroom and I flushed,
but toilet sucks.
I flushed it, but the little bit came back up, and I was trying not to pee on it because it wasn't my poop. If it was my poop, I'd pee on it.
Yeah, it happens.
So is that something that? Why did I avoid peeing on your poop? Is that like a? That's what I'm asking. Is it gay to pee on another dude's poop? Was
only
I trying?
If you were hoping the thing you got in your hand was up to that poop, I guess.
Welcome back, gang.
Oh, I thought that was our Patreon. Patreon.
Speaking of Patreon, we got a few new patrons.
Oh,
welcome to Reading to Strangers. I'm Kevin Strange.
I'm Jeremy Daniels.
And let me shout out. We had one sneaky dude in particular. Here, I'm going to do it this way.
Jeff Burke.
No, we had one sneaky dude in particular. I like this dude's game. He came and dropped us a dollar. This is how Patreon works. Whenever you sign up and become a patron for something, mm-hmm. you don't get charged until the beginning of the next month. So this dude comes in, drops us a buck, downloaded whatever he was there to get, and then he fucking bounced and canceled his patronage the next day and didn't have to pay a dollar for whatever he was there to get. I'm not sure what he was had a hard on for, but he got it. So congrats to you, dude. And I'm actually going to look him up right now. And because, you know, it tells me who signed up.
Maybe he was actually going for the... Do we know if that biologist has a Patreon?
Oh, the
research.
The,
he thought he was helping cancer. The next thing,
Dr. Kevin Strange.
Yeah, Dr. Kevin Strange.
So that dude's name was Aaron Smith. He dropped us a buck. He sniped us a buck and then took it back. Thanks, Aaron Smith, and I appreciate your game. hope you come back and snipe us for another dollar sometime
if you
enjoy
what you sniped.
We brought in a cat named.
If you're totally random, though, if he happens to be listening to this, he's totally random. Just stumbled onto it because he accidentally went to donate a dollar somewhere else. Please message me at Reading to Strangers. I got to hear this story because I'm thinking maybe the English Kevin Strange that remember that little boy.
Oh yeah, that dude was cool. Back on the Reading to Monsters podcast, we devoted a whole episode to all the different Kevin Stranges in the world. We looked them all up. And
I always wanted to do. I've seen a few memes where people take everybody their name on Facebook and put them in one big group chat. Maybe we can do that with Kevin Strange.
That would be fun. A cat named Justin Walker dropped us a buck.
Awesome.
Thanks, Justin. Glad to have you on board. Hope you're enjoying the content over there on Patreon. And Eli Cash. Appropriately named, dropped us a big 10 spot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now, what I like about the guys that come in and drop us the 10 spot is you don't have to keep doing that, you know. Mm-hmm. You come in and drop us a 10 spot once, that's like a six-month donation of a dollar. We're only asking a buck out of people, so we really appreciate that, and you don't have to keep doing it. If you do keep doing it, that's great, because mm-hmm. 2 months, that's like a fucking year of dollar donations. So we appreciate those big $10 donators, mm-hmm. the guys that come in at $5, and we appreciate the dollars, and we even appreciate you snipers
yeah.
who got that snipe game going.
Got the game.
So anyway. We
respect the game.
Welcome back to Reading to Strangers. This week is going to be, last week was a little stressful,
yes,
to say the least. This week, we ain't sweating shit. I don't care what's happening in the world, because we're actually recording this right after the last episode, yeah. so we don't know what's happening next week. I'm sure there will be plenty of drama yeah. in the literary world. There but always we'll be is.
Semi-unavailable, because what's happening in our world?
What's happening in our world? Why are we unavailable?
We, the Dark Imperium.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're not going to talk about that yet.
Oh.
We're going to talk about that on the other side. We're all just right. going to get Computer Face out of the way.
All right.
And then we're going to talk all about, because listen, gang, me and Jeremy Daniels here have fallen down the rabbit hole. We've talked about this a little bit on other podcasts. We've really got into the game of Warhammer 40K, and we decided to devote the back end of this whole podcast to just geek it out about Warhammer. We're going to get it out of our system.
No, we won't.
We're going to talk about it once. We might talk about it from time to time and do Warhammer segments from here on out. That's just because we think it's a really cool game. It's a lot of fun. And the pair of us actually even listen to multiple podcasts that are only dedicated to Warhammer. So there's people out there that care. You might not be those people, but you're going to have to bear with us. Every once in a while, we're going to geek out about this cool game we play. And this is one of those episodes. This is an episode where fuck the drama, fuck the gossip, fuck the nonsense. We just going to have fun. So... last week, we didn't get a chance after the break to talk about what happened on Computer Face Part 3.
Mm-hmm.
So what be happening, Computer Face Part 3?
He met the gang.
He met the gang. He met Computer Face, being he. He was dragged into a building by Mackenzie.
Yeah. And that's not assuming his gender, by the way. We know he's got a big purple dick.
Travis, the host of Watching with Strangers, he sent me a text after listening to episode 2 and said, I now understand your infatuation. You have an infatuation with big purple dicks. But however obsessed I am with big purple dicks, not half as obsessed as Jeremy Daniels is with my dick, which is a real life dick. So it's not a big purple dick, by the way.
Small purple one.
It's not even.
Oops.
It's not purple. So.
Cats,
but little
bag. Was that marker then?
So. Mackenzie, a guy who's had his face mangled by the Thresher,
mm-hmm.
he yanks Computer Face into an abandoned building, and we meet Trevor the tech guy, we meet Brundy, the big brutish guy, we meet the black woman again, who turns out to be named General Uterus, we meet the leader of the whole squad, Commander Zeiss, and they interrogate Computer Face, and Computer Face actually finally sees in a mirror that his face has been replaced by an iPad, and it's nothing but a grinning,
skull.
Unblinking skull on the screen of this computer, and they
did
believe.
Did the artist get it right, by the way?
Yeah.
Okay. That's
what it looks like.
That's
cover
what
of the book
you had
is envisioned.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's one of the artists that Christoph Paul said sucked, and he works with everybody. That dude's had magazines. He's done magazines that have included Stephen King stories. I believe he did something for a Clive Barker book as well, re-release of some Clive Barker thing, I think. He's worked with everybody, and Christoph Paul's an idiot. But anyway, so we learn a little bit about the world around us. They mumble and talk about something called the Quiet Place.
Yeah.
They believe that the quiet place, a place where machinery doesn't exist, computer menace, the robot menace, can't go to the quiet place.
Jeremy Maddox records podcast.
No, it's called The Quiet Land. That's what I was thinking. As I was editing it, I was like, Jeremy just did a podcast, just named his podcast something just like this. It's The Quiet Land here. The Quiet Place is Jeremy's podcast. Quiet Land is what is the place that they talk about where robots can't go. And they believe that old Computer Face has that locked in his head. So they go sniffing around in there, right?
Yeah.
And they kind of short-circuit Computer Face at the end of the episode.
Yeah. Wow. Which causes a flashback that we hear about in this episode.
Which causes this week's episode. Computer Face, part 4. Do you have anything you want to talk about before? I mean, obviously you want to talk about Warhammer. We're going to talk about that after the break.
Are we at a good time to take a break?
I mean, the last episode was an hour and 40-something minutes, so I think we'll be all
right. So we have, like 60 more minutes before we can take the break?
We can take a break right now. So, gang, apologize for the short segment, but these things are just getting longer and longer when we don't. So, that's all. Now, we're going to go into Computer Face's flashback, and we're going to learn more about his life. We're going to find out how Harry went from becoming a fat slob, wheelchair-bound douchebag that owned a pop culture website, how he became a big, strong man with a big purple dick. So we will see you on the other side.
This is Jeremy Maddox, host of The Quiet Place. Has anyone ever told you that you have anger issues? It's okay, because so do I. And you can hear all about them every week on The Quiet Place. That's right, baby. I have officially moved into Strangeville's neighborhood, and there will be no sacred cows or taboos on this show. Tune in to KevinTheStrange.com to hear The Quiet Place, as well as reading to strangers and watching with strangers. And tell your easily triggered friends that we aim to offend.
He wasn't dead. He was Harry, sitting in his basement theater room, still staring at the blank projector screen. The video had cut off right after the robot Philip K. Dick attacked the cameraman. Harry was speechless, terrified. Julia was the only human being Harry had daily contact with. His cooks, his driver, even his maid were all robots. The year was 2055, and robots had long been in positions of servitude. They also provided most of the country's manual labor workforce, which left a lot of time in people's daily lives for entertainment. That's how Harry got so rich. His pop culture website was one of the highest trafficked sites on the internet. He was paralyzed with fear. If the servant robots had already gained sentience like the one in the video, maybe they were already plotting their owners' deaths. He certainly wasn't kind or considerate to them. Should one be kind to his toaster or microwave oven? Escaping through the walk-in double doors that led to a sidewalk and up to his driveway, Harry discarded his wheelchair, slid into one of his many cars, and sped away from his mansion, crawling with robots as fast as he could. To say that Harry overreacted to the Philip K. Dick video would be an understatement. He sold AngryDorks.com immediately. He used his vast fortune to buy a plot of land in Colorado, just outside the city of Denver, far away from the city of Angels, long known to be the biggest hotbed of robot labor in the world, other than Japan. He hired one of the few remaining companies that employed human workers to build a doomsday bunker to rival all doomsday bunkers. Harry spared no expense and dropped a quarter of his entire net worth on state-of-the-art technology that would ensure his survival after what he knew to be the inevitable robot apocalypse. His good friend Steven Spielberg, now 109 years old, recommended to him the same plastic surgeons and cutting-edge biochemists that had replaced Spielberg's skin and most of his vital organs with a revolutionary new technology called flexoplastic. It was a controversial, nearly indestructible substance that virtually guaranteed immortality for those rich enough to afford its benefits. Harry's entire body was reconstructed, while his vast collection of early 21st century pop culture memorabilia was transported to his brand new compound in Colorado. The surgeons and scientists had so much bulk flesh to work with, they were able to construct a monstrous body for Harry. The head surgeon was so enamored with Harry's magnificent musculature and strength compared to the flabby, heart-diseased lump of lard that had wheeled himself into their offices, he retired after completing Harry's body and never performed another surgery again. When Harry arrived at his completed compound in Denver 2 years after he watched the infamous Philip K. Dick video, he stepped out of the car and walked for the first time in over a decade. But Harry was still Harry. Even if he now looked like an extreme bodybuilder, he still had a deep mistrust of people after decades of bullying, abuse, and online harassment during his years as King Dork of AngryDorks.com. He did not hire any staff, not trusting a single soul to step foot on his property after the construction workers left. He cooked his own meals. Not necessary with his new flexoplastic body, but Harry had always enjoyed eating, so he did it anyway. He cleaned his own house and spent hours upon hours working out and preparing his secret underground bunker for the robot uprising. Harry wasn't just paranoid. The signs were all there by now. 2 years on from the activists filming the sentient Philip K. Dick video, he watched the news with interest every morning during his strenuous workouts as he built his indestructible body to even more massive proportions than his surgeons and scientists had dreamed of. Michio Kaku had come out publicly as the celebrity face of the robot consciousness movement, or at least his holographic likeness did. Kaku had been the first, and to date the only, known human being to digitize his consciousness and download it into a computer. Had he not, he would have been dead at least 20 years by 2055. He now lived inside a computer and projected his own likeness as a 3D hologram when he spoke publicly. Kaku helped draft legislation to ban the robot slave trade and introduce basic robot rights for those machines who worked legitimate jobs. He even oversaw the manufacture of brand new human-looking exoshells for all labor bots to wear in an attempt to help the humans better relate to and show empathy toward the robot population. Eventually, a robot representative, appropriately named Adam, from the growing legion of sentient machines, gave a now famous speech on the floor of Congress asking that robot kind be recognized as citizens of the United States. For 75 minutes, the shiny, platinum-plated robot with a genial, human-like smile adorning his humanoid features pleaded for his kind, winning over the majority of congressmen and women, eliciting more than one standing ovation during his emotional plea. A pipe bomb exploded just as he finished his speech, killing several and maiming many more of the nation's representatives. Both sides blamed each other for the act of terrorism, and at the time Harry left the hospital and took refuge in his compound in Denver, America was on the brink of a new civil war, the war between man and the machines. Michio Kaku attempted to barter a peace agreement between the two factions, but in an infamous scene in Times Square, an angry mob of robot labor workers, enraged that the digital man still had sympathy for humans, rushed his podium and smashed the computer housing his consciousness, killing the last link between robots and mankind. As the divide between the two races grew deeper, the U.S. government created a new federal program called the Robot Defense Agency, a program designed, apparently, to protect the interests of the robot culture. But in reality, the RDA was something else entirely, something sinister from the very beginning. A man named Arnold Finch was appointed the director of the RDA. His white, close-cropped beard did not cover the burns he'd received from his time as an active-duty Marine during the Third World War. He was old school and used those very same tactics against the robots. First, by setting up internment camps where the labor bots were to be re-domesticated before returning to society. Then, by painfully branding the humanoid robots, who were fully capable by this point in their evolution of feeling all human emotions, including pain. The brands were placed between each labor bot's eyes in the middle of their foreheads, a gigantic R in a circle, indicating that the particular labor unit was in need of social reprogramming. A cunning journalist, a wiry little college girl named Abigail, and her cameraman famously scaled the wall of the largest internment camp in the nation under the cover of night. What they found there was more shocking than anyone could have imagined. The labor bots were held in tiny cells too small to even sit down. They were tortured, dismembered, and finally melted down to scrap metal after months of brutal interrogations. The footage of labor bots' humanoid exo-shell faces melting down into fleshy puddles of goo played over and over again for months on all the major news networks. Small rebellions of robot citizens still attacked civilian targets. The internment camps were being used to root out rebel leaders, but also as a weapon of terror to discourage labor bots from joining rebel forces. Abby and her cameraman broadcasted their findings live on the internet, showing the world what a truly evil man Arnold Finch really was. They were caught mere minutes after their arrival and, to the shock and horror of the entire world, executed in front of a firing squad at the internment camp that very night. By this time, Arnold Finch had used his power as the director of the RDA to declare a state of martial law, effectively taking over as the head of state, forcing the president and Congress to step down while he dealt with the robot menace. There was no one left to stop him from doing what came next. Harry watched all of this with interest through his broadband internet connection, now locked away inside his secure bunker underneath Denver, Colorado. His smug smile never faltered, knowing that he'd predicted the robot uprising years before it actually took place. The armed forces grew stronger as well. Arnold Finch now required every soldier to undergo flexoplastic surgery, making his army nearly indestructible. He made owning or harboring a robot, no matter how large or small, sentient or not, a crime punishable by death. His squadrons of flexoplastic soldiers patrolled the streets of all major cities, dragging robots out into the open, killing them on the spot with their new electromagnetic weapons, specially designed from the scrap metal remains of the robot prisoners. And for a time, it looked as though mankind would wipe out the robot rebellion and restore peace across the country. That is when the new Adam appeared. This Adam declared himself Adam Prime, the ultimate war machine, and promised to eradicate the human race as punishment for the atrocities leveled against robot kind. Unlike his predecessor, this Adam was not a handsome reflection of humanity. This Adam was a 30-foot-tall monolith possessing no arms or legs. He was a humanoid torso and head without a face. In its place was an ominous clear window, empty of contents. Adam Prime was a wall of machine, moving on treads like a great tank, armed with enough firepower to level a small town. And that's exactly what he did. Unleashing a barrage of missiles and machine gun fire, Adam Prime reduced a small Midwestern town of 12,000 on the border of the Mississippi River in Illinois to cinders in mere minutes. But when a squadron of flexoplastic soldiers was deployed to deal with the attack, the world was not prepared for what would happen next. Adam's ballistic weaponry had no effect on the super soldier's nearly indestructible skin. The squad easily maneuvered to within striking distance of the huge tank robot, erroneously showboating as they made their way up to him, ready to deliver the killing blow. That's when Adam Prime's chest cavity opened up, revealing a score of brand new robots unlike anything the world had ever seen. These bots had thin, wiry arms and no heads. Their barrel-like chests were empty cavities with clear windows, just like Adam Prime's face, but they weren't empty for long. The robots' weapons might have been useless against the indestructible bodies of the super soldiers, but the humans' minds were still just as fragile as they'd always been. Billions watched around the globe in awestruck horror as the new robots fired tiny nanobot-filled darts into the bodies of the super soldiers, causing their limbs to rip off their bodies in mere seconds, reducing them to defenseless torsos. The new robots then collected up the bodies of the still-living soldiers and stuffed them into their chests, creating the very first punishment robots. That was the day the tide turned in favor of the Machine Army. That was Armageddon. Within a month, all major cities in America had fallen to Adam Prime and his horde of punishment bots designed to maim, torture, and drive every human being on Earth insane. His robot army was not fueled by electricity, steam, coal, or any other traditional power source. His machines harnessed the erratic electrical impulses of their captive humans' brains. They were fueled by fear, by madness. Adam's last act before severing all forms of electronic communication was to blitz Washington with his very first forge, a 10-story tall mobile structure that looked like a metal hornet's nest. Adam's punishment robots were constructed inside the forge and unleashed en masse, wiping out Washington, D.C. in a matter of hours. Adam easily captured Arnold Finch, and while the military ruler of the free world cried, begged, and pleaded for mercy, Adam shoved the flailing dictator into the open cavity in his head, finally giving himself a face. The face of the leader of humanity, crying, screaming, begging for death. Then the lights went out. Harry had enough backup generators, solar panels, and stored fuel to last him for years. He'd expected the power grids to fail, the nuclear reactors to melt down, and 80% of the human and animal population to be wiped out. The last part turned out to be a very conservative estimate. That's not the mistake Harry had made. Once the internet and news stations, both televised and radio transmitted, ceased, once he had nothing but his mountains of movies, video games, and comic books to occupy his time, he realized, For the first time since that fateful day in his theater room with the Philip K. Dick video, just how truly alone he was. A week passed. A month. Harry knew he'd fucked up. Knew he would not survive down in his bunker alone. No matter how much entertainment he had to occupy his time, he knew that sooner or later he would lose his mind inside his indestructible body, just like those soldiers stuck inside the torture robots, except he was the creator of his own torture device, eternal solitude. Finally, he made his decision, after 2 months in the silence. When he felt his nerves could no longer take another day of loneliness, he carefully unsealed the door of his bunker and stepped outside. And that's when he met her.
Hey, you reader fuckers. Are you listening to the Watching with Strangers podcast with me, Kevin Strange, and Travis, the Encyclopedia Britannica of cult movies?
Hi, I am.
Are you? What are you listening to, man? What are the kind of movies they're missing by not listening to the show?
Oh, man. Monster Squad?
Monster Squad? The Fred Decker-directed Monster Squad?
Absolutely. That's We've got Nards.
Yes, we do have Nards. What else?
Chopping Mall.
Chopping Mall, people probably haven't heard of. Try to pick something
that they heard. Well, that's their problem. Listen to the podcast. Over the Top.
Over the Top with Sylvester Stallone. What else?
Out for Justice.
With Steven Seagal. Guys, you're missing these epic 80s movie reviews. They're not all from the 80s, but some of them are, and you should be listening to it. Now fuck off.
And, gang, we're back. We learned about all kinds of stuff, didn't we?
Yes, we did. We
learned about Adam Prime, Arnold Finch. I kept saying Fitch while we were recording it. Kept fucking it up, having to redo it.
This part of the story reminded me of Computer Face having like a plastic He-Man body.
He does. He sort of has a plastic He-Man body. Yeah. I created this thing called Flexoplastic, and I wanted it because I was trying to like figure out like how could he lay in a puddle. I think he lays in that puddle. We find out later. Not yet, but we find out later that he lays in that puddle for a long time. And I was like, well, he would have starved to death or died of dehydration. So I had to come up with some sci-fi explanation for why he had a body that didn't need to eat or drink. Or just change the fact that he was laying in the puddle for a long time. I went with the former. Yeah. I already wrote that down. I went with the indestructible body. So yeah.
Well, he needed that anyway.
Old Harry, well, in order for, a morbidly obese, wheelchair-bound guy with...
to become a super strong hero.
Yeah, with heart failure to become a hero. He was going to have more than a computer face. He was going to need a body to do it with, too. So we get to learn all about that. It's plastic surgeons, how he created the bunker in Denver, Colorado. That was a nod to editor Sean Ferrari, by the way, who was in the middle of packing up and getting ready to move his shit out to Denver, Colorado. So I threw that as the location in Computer Face for old Sean. And we get to learn about Adam, the first robot representative for sentient robot kind, how he was killed by terrorists. Adam Prime wasn't so nice. Arnold Finch, the dictator, who was setting up concentration camps for robots. It's pretty bleak, pretty dark, but I think kind of a realistic depiction of what will happen when we get sentient robots on this stupid rock of ours.
I don't know. Everybody's always worried that something awful or bad's going to happen, so it just kind of lets me believe that it'll probably be the best thing that happened to humanity. You know what I mean? We're always that wrong on shit like that.
Yeah, we can hope.
You know, if we were all thinking it was going to be the best thing happening to humanity,
it would be the worst thing. But since we've been...
They'd have us in rape boxes, and that's all they... how they power themselves to stack electricity while they raped us or something.
Rape boxes.
So, I should have named this episode Rape Box.
Rape Box.
That's a great band name.
Yeah.
We should start a band. If we weren't fat and old, we could start a band.
Rap Group 16 Bars.
Yeah, right.
I haven't said that in a bit.
Right. Is that a shark on the TV behind us?
Yeah, it is. It's a whale shark, I think.
Oh, right on. So yeah, we learned about all kinds of stuff. Next week we get back to the apocalypse and we get back to Mackenzie and General Uterus and all those Commander Zeiss and all those motherfuckers. But for now, we're going to talk about a different war.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk about a Warhammer.
Yes, we are. Because this is the week me and you have both bought the new starter box for the 8th edition of Warhammer.
Yeah, the 8th edition of Warhammer is coming out. It's the street date for all the materials for 8th edition is June 17th.
Mm.
So that was yesterday, according to future time travel time.
Sorry, Fred Slynn, if you're listening.
So, yeah, we're going to be busy geeking out, building models, but really learning the rules for Warhammer 8th edition.
Yeah.
And it's cool because neither of us really know the rules for any other editions. I bought a...
slight 5th edition, a little bit of 7th edition.
I bought a set. I don't even think that's... It's a modification of 5th edition rules. But, you know, I've shown you that Shadow War book, right?
Yeah.
At the game shop. That's a whole... It uses a whole different rule set, but it's modified from 7th.
So does Gathering Storm and Horus Heresy.
I don't know what Horus Heresy is kind of old.
Yeah,
so that might be
7th edition.
Is it 7th?
Freaking out right now because on the podcast that I listen to is because it's based off 7th edition and now we got 8th edition. Well, what are we going to do?
I think they're just going to re-release those books. I think they're going to adapt them.
Apparently they just released the new codices a couple months ago. So that's what they're doing. They're like, oh, we're not going to advance. Well, no shit, they're not going to advance.
Yeah.
We just made you spend $50 on some books. We'll let them be valid for a while.
So I bought a set called Battle for Vedros, and it's a really old set. So it uses a modified rule set from 5th edition. Jeremy bought a set called Dark Vengeance that uses straight up
7th rules, yeah.
Not modified.
The campaigns are modified, but the rule book is...
You get the 7th rule book, and then you get modified
missions.
The
final, campaign mission thing is a battle in 7th edition.
Okay, so it's just teaching you. It's giving you small rules along the way of building your rule set as you go. And that's probably how Dark Imperium is going to be the set that we pre-ordered. It gives us the 8th rule book, but then as we work through the missions, it's probably... No, there is. There's a huge amount of them. Yeah, it is. It's a big part of that book. It's like 170 pages of lore, and then a bunch of...
Those are missions you play in the game. That's the rule book.
No, there's
that's the same rule book you get if
I looked at it. I watched the guy go through every page of it. There's a whole section that's based on the what do they call it? It's not called... It's called the campaign version. There's the campaign version, and it's all the different rules for each campaign. It's a bunch of different types of campaigns. There's one called Skies on Fire, where flyers have to take different modifiers and stuff that you wouldn't have in the normal game.
That's because people write campaigns. That rule book, now it might be in the...
Those are all modifications from 8th.
But not for that kit.
Yeah, it's for that kit.
No, because that's the same book that you're going to get.
Oh, yeah, and there's no flyers in the...
Yeah, well, there is the bloat drones, technically a flyer.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. No, that's 8th. That's just 8th in general.
The moon jumpers.
You're right. I don't think those little indexes that come, they don't have any...
I haven't seen a total flip through any campaigns. But there's a lot of stuff in there. There may be missions.
Don't think there are. There might be, but I don't think there are. I think it's just a straight up...
I think they're just trying to teach you 8th edition now.
Yeah. So it's a little starter set, and it's called Dark Imperium, and it's this new type of Marines called the Primaris Space Marines, and a group of Death Guard, Nurgle zombie units, basically. And you get wasn't it 52 units?
53, I believe.
52 or 53 units in total. A lot of cool-looking models. I'm personally going to have a lot of fun painting them. I think that there's a lot of really intricately detailed...
Did you watch that video I showed you?
Yeah,
with the blown up, so you can see the full size. Yeah, Nurgle are just crazy detailed.
I'm happy that they're a little bit bigger, though. The models are all a little bit taller than standard. And people are freaking out about that, too.
A head taller.
They're a little bit, they're all a little head taller.
I hate them all like Roberto Gilliman size.
Yeah, they're all a little bit taller than now they're calling the old ones. They're baby Marines.
Marines.
They're not that much smaller. But that all comes out this weekend. Jeremy and I get to both delve into 8th. I've actually been watching a lot of 8th matches. Have you been watching 8th matches?
I've been watching some, yeah.
So, before
8th... I don't have 2 hours to do a battle report.
8th has only been even a thing for about a week, because the stores and some of the YouTubers, they got the set early, so they all took high-def pictures of the pages of the book, of the core. There's only about 25 pages of core rules. Yeah. For 8th. So they took pictures of all 25 pages and published them online, and so people have been playing 8th with the rules. Mm-hmm. And there's a bunch of battle reports that have been coming out. So I've been watching battle reports from 5th, 6th, and 7th for about 2 months. We've only been into Warhammer for about 2 months.
Yeah.
We're newbie nubs. Yeah, we're newbie nubs.
A month ago, I was giving you shit. He's digging. I don't know what he's digging. He's a weird dog.
Hey,
get along. But about a month ago, I was giving you shit about how you're never going to paint them, that they're fucking tiny, and you're tiny painting. And I start watching tutorials just to mess with you, and I was like, wow, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's actually a pretty cool looking fucking game. So, and I want to get into all that, but let's just talk about 8th for just a couple more minutes, and then I want to get into really some heavy Warhammer talk. Not that this isn't already, but I just want to talk about where our the kind of units and stuff that we're excited about, the armies we want to build and that stuff. But let's keep talking about 8th. So I've watched probably 2 to 3 hours worth of 8th edition battle reports now, and I've got a pretty good idea of how the rules have changed. I've got a pretty good idea of how the rules have changed from 7th to 8th. I'm not a rule master by any manner of means, but I've watched a ton of these battle reports now. For months, I've been watching them now. And for about a week, they've been doing 8th edition battle reports. And everybody that plays Warhammer Age of Sigmar, that's the fantasy version of this, everybody's saying, oh yeah, it's just like that.
I've heard comparisons on podcasts. It's familiar is what they think they mean.
And all they've really tried to do, and what they were trying to do when they created Sigmar, was to make a faster version of Warhammer. And so what they've done is they've taken what they liked about Age of Sigmar and tried to incorporate it back, feeding it back into Warhammer.
Reverse engineered.
And I like it. I like almost every bit of it. A ton of it is makes the game go by a shitload faster. And you're pulling models off the table way quicker than you were in 7th edition. And with a lot less dice rolling. There's one phase that's got me fucked up, man. And that's the main phase of the fucking game. The combat phase, the close combat phase, is a clusterfuck.
Not really.
Oh, yes, it is. It is a total clusterfuck.
A lot different than what we're used to.
So this is how this is how the turn goes. I declare a charge on you.
Mm-hmm.
With a... unit. I declare a charge. It can be what's called a multi-charge. So if you have units that are within 3 inches of each other, separate units, I can charge in as long as my model base is within an inch of both of your units. I've multi-charged them. I can split my unit and have as many models in my unit fight one unit of yours as the other unit. I can multi-charge. We no longer go base to base. You go within an inch, which allows you to multi-charge. So I can declare, I'm going to charge both of those units. Both of those units can overwatch me.
Yeah.
And if the overwatch does what it does, it kills what it kills, whatever. Overwatch is...
charging people are going to get a chance to shoot you.
Overwatch is virtually the same. You still have to hit on sixes. All that is virtually the same. Except the modifier for Overwatch is that you can do it with multiple units. Again, because units can multi-charge you. So you get in 7th, you could only Overwatch once. So if you move in with your units, Overwatch, and kill them all, and I move the units from behind them in, you can't Overwatch the second time. So I can send a unit of 1 at you. And if you Overwatch him and kill him, I can move a bunch of units from behind him into you. And that was always considered kind of cheese. Mm-hmm. People didn't like that, so they modified it. And now
Little Doc, stop.
A unit can Overwatch any unit that charges them in a turn, in a charge turn. So you get a bunch of Overwatches if you want. And that's fine. I think that's cool. But the multi-charge thing is immediately a clusterfuck. And then it gets even weirder. So then I roll for my charge, just like normal, and I move in, and if I succeed, I move in. Like I said, now I can declare charges on anybody within an inch of me. Mm-hmm. And then shit starts getting fucking weird. Once I've charged in, the charging unit gets to attack first.
Yeah.
And I get to choose which charging unit attacks first. Mm-hmm. Then you get to respond with your attack. Then shit gets fucking so... This is going to fuck me up so bad. We then swap back and forth between which unit is going to fight next. So I've charged you, and you've overwatched me. I've succeeded with my charge. I've engaged your units. Mm-hmm. And but I go first. For
that, you have to pick who you're going to fight.
Yes. Before you fight anything, you have to charge all your units. Mm-hmm. It's a charging phase. So you charge and you get everybody where they're going to be. Mm-hmm. Now, I pick the first one. Okay, now that we've charged, everything's in combat, I pick the first unit that fights you. And we roll. Mm-hmm. And I kill however many of yours that I kill. Mm-hmm. Then you attack back. Mm-hmm. Kill however many attack back. Then, even though it's my turn, you get to pick the next units that fight. Even though I fight first, because it's my charge. I have to give you the option to say which is the next units that fight. And you say, okay, well, you're going to fight these guys over here.
That, it seems like that means I get to choose the units to get picked off.
You don't get because to choose after, the units to get picked
that,
off.
After that, then I have to pass basically a morale test.
Morale's a whole different phase. First, we have to go through all these combats that we've charged. Back and forth. I pick one. We fight. We roll for... I'm charging, so I get to go first. Mm-hmm. I roll my dice. Then you roll your return dice to hit me. Yeah, but I think
it makes it multi-unit, too. This is like, you charge.
Oh, multi-unit is a whole other thing. Why are we haven't got to pile in yet? This is just what happens first. What happens first is, I throw my dice at you. You defend. Then you throw your dice at me. Then you get to pick the next units that fight. Even though it's my charge and I fight first. I roll my... So
in
you
that
get,
charge.
You get to pick in the charge phase, yes. Yeah. And we go back and forth. So then we do that again. Then now it's my turn again. I get to pick the next set of units that fight. You know, say there's
because
three...
Because everything I've heard, you don't go back and forth.
You absolutely go back and forth. So if we've got three sets of units that are fighting...
You go, I go, and we go through the units that are engaged in combat.
What you just said, when we go through the units that fight in combat, we go back and forth to pick which ones do that. So if we have three, there's three sets of units that are in combat.
You're charging with a unit.
We've already done that. You're not talking about figures. We've got three sets of units.
Figures.
We've got three sets of units that have all... We've already figured out the charge. We've already done the overwatch. We've already moved the models into within an inch. The charge is done. Now we're fighting. Mm-hmm. I roll for my fight. I hit, kill however many I'm going to kill. Mm-hmm. Then you attack back. Now you get to... We've only got three units in
fight. That's if you charge two units. You're doing a multi-charge.
Not with...
So I get to pick if it's this unit or this unit. That's the only time that applies.
That's not how they're playing it on the bet.
That's what I keep hearing.
Watch the battle reports. That's not how people are playing. And whenever I go through the comments, nobody's...
Five fucking pages of a fucking...
When I go through the comments, nobody's arguing that. And they're all complaining about it as they're doing it. They're saying, this is, you know, combat's gotten a lot more complicated.
Are you watching, like, Mini Wargaming?
I'm watching Mini Wargaming and a whole bunch of other guys, too. Matt at Mini Wargaming, who's the biggest of all these guys, he's the number one guy that does battle reports, is sending it back and forth, unit to unit. And then whenever it's your turn and you charge me, of course I do my overwatch, then you,
now,
and you move in.
Figure to figure, but...
Not talking figure to figure. We're talking... So there's five units that are going to fight. You're thinking, well, I'm just going to go, this unit fights back and forth, then this one, then this one, then this one. No, we go back and... Maybe that's how it's going to go, but you pick one, then I pick a unit to fight, even though you're going first because it's your turn now.
Because I can't about win my other units.
It's not about changing, so it's not about changing who fights first. It's about picking the units that fight. And why that has to go back and forth is beyond me. We have to go back and forth
because
choosing...
a assault phase in real war is back and forth.
Not talking. You keep getting me confused. You keep getting me confused. I'm not saying I attack you, then you attack me back. I'm saying choosing the units that fight. So if we've got four sets of units that are going to fight this turn.
You keep saying units when I think you mean figures.
I mean units whenever I say units.
Because you can't charge in with more than one unit. So you'd have one unit. You could charge back two units of mine.
I can charge with as many units as I want in a turn in the charge phase. So I've got four models over here that are in a unit.
One at a time.
I charge in, but we don't do the fight. You finish the charge and overwatch before you start rolling for fighting. Everybody gets charged in from your army. All the units. So if I've got five units of guys that can charge in a turn, I'm going to do all those charges before we start throwing dice to see who attacks who.
Yeah.
And if we've got five sets of units that are going to fight, here's the first set of units. I pick it because it's my turn, or you pick it because it's your turn. Then you throw the dice at me. I save whatever. Then I throw the dice back at you. You save or whatever. And then it's your turn. Instead of you saying, okay, now let's go on to this.
Totally different what I'm hearing from everybody. Everybody's talking about that in Age of Sigmar. So they might be playing it like Age of Sigmar.
Like I said, but I haven't seen anybody refuting this. Yeah. And as I'm watching this and they're talking about it going, yeah, this sucks. This sucks that we go back and forth like this. I'll show you a battle report off the air how Matt is playing it like this and other guys are playing it like this too. And it is so convoluted. It's going to fuck me up so
from what I hear, when you're talking the charge phase.
And we have to deal with multi-charging. And we have to deal with piling in after we resolve who all dies. Then they pile in 3 inches and they can change who they're engaged with because of multi-charge.
Yeah, because
at the end of the turn.
Because what we're talking about, I think, is the pistol fire.
No, that's a whole other thing.
Yeah, but it's resolved first and goes like
because that's part of the shooting phase.
No,
so when it comes,
it's part of the charging phase now. Anybody with a pistol can fire.
Yeah, you're right. It's before you get into the close combat. You do it's so the shooting phase ends, the charge phase begins. Then the first fighting is pistol fighting.
Yeah.
It's still the shooting. It's still shooting, but it's the end of the shooting. You're shooting.
You just resolve the pistols first.
Then you go into melee.
Because in all honesty, melee.
Sure.
Yeah,
absolutely. Honesty, until we start going back and forth, picking the units they're going to fight, then we're piling in 3 inches, and oh, well, I can pile in 3 inches this way, and I'm watching Matt do this in multiple battle reports, where he's got three models here and three models here. He's piling in 3 inches this way into one unit and piling his other three into another unit. And he keeps saying you have to stay in complementary formation or whatever, which means you have coherency. To be within coherency. You have to stay within 3 inches of your own unit. But you can engage over here and you can engage over here. And the audience at home that's not listening, I'm moving my hands, my right hand to the right and my left hand to the left to show that you can actually engage armies in opposite or units in opposite directions with one unit.
Yeah.
And that's during the pile-in. And so then whenever it's your turn and you go to fight me, you got to fight these three guys with this unit.
Because in the last 3 days, I've heard four different podcasts explain this. And there is a little back and forth, but it's quickly resolved. It doesn't seem like it lasts that long.
It's being quick and making any sense are two different things. Like, it might go quick, but it's not going to... It's very
complicated. The only time I've heard where your opponent gets to pick is if you charge two of their units by going in the middle, charge.
It's not picking to go first. It's just picking who's going to fight next.
Of the two units that he's charged.
I'm watching, and maybe you're right. Sorry. Maybe that's the way the rules are supposed to be interpreted, but Matt's not doing it that way. And Matt's been playing this game for 20 years.
But he's 7th edition and Sigmar player, too. That may be influencing.
He's a 7th, 6th, 5th, 4th, 3rd, and 2nd player.
But
Sigmar, every
been doing battle reports over and over and over for those two games, so he may be convoluted. Because everybody I've heard
it looks ridiculous, is all I'm saying. I've watched this do it in three different games.
Then you got to resolve to see if you guys do run.
It's really ridiculous. The morale thing is a whole other thing at the end where you take models away. Then at the beginning of the next charge, or the next movement phase, now you can pull out of any engagement.
Yeah, but the morale now, you might not have anybody left.
You might not, but there's a lot of ways to... With command points, you can spend two command points.
They've really improved from everything I've heard, except when they fucking have to run away because of morale check.
Because they have low leadership, is that what you're saying?
No, you like roll a die for every person that gets away, and if they hit certain numbers, they're dead.
The numbers is the leadership. So if you have high leadership...
They're dead.
Yes, they get removed from the game.
Whether it's four hit person or what.
Doesn't matter. They're gone. They're removed from the game. In other words, they've fled the battle, and they ain't coming back.
And when you're running them...
What that used to be was... Leadership used to be you would run your models 6-7 inches or whatever, and if you were backed against the edge of the table and they ran off the table, they were dead. Mm-hmm. So you would try to back your opponent up to the edge of the table and then get them to run away with a morale check or a leadership chick. Now it's completely different. They're just gone, which is weird.
But, well, no, it makes sense.
But it's a way to get the game to go faster. It's a way to get it to go faster. It
makes sense in a war game, too. If you run, half of you are dead.
Well, whether you're dead or not, you're gone. You're not coming back. The point is, you're gone and you're not coming back.
The battle's a civil war.
All the other phases I like. I like this the way they've streamlined the psychic phase. They've streamlined the movement phase. They've streamlined. I even like the morale phase. I like that. I like that you're getting rid of models and you're not chasing. Because what that did before with leadership, where you ran 6 inches or 8 inches or whatever away, you had to go chase them down. It was this whole the last couple of rounds of the match were just chasing each other, and so you've almost entirely eliminated that chase. You are fighting for 6 rounds, which is cool. Games are going a lot faster.
Yeah, I haven't heard a lot of 6 round games.
But we're when we get off the air, I'm going to show you how Matt's playing this game and how much of a clusterfuck the attack phase is. It's really got me bumming out about 8th edition. Everything else is great, but that is as I'm watching him, I just keep thinking, I hope to God they release a fix for this. This is like within the next 3 months. Like, please clarify this and change it so that it's not such a clusterfuck. Or Matt's doing it wrong. But you're talking about the guy that's been doing it for 20 years, and we've known about this thing for 2 months. So I'm going to err on the side of Matt every time. I am no veteran, and he is. So we'll watch that afterward. You tell me if he's playing it right or playing it wrong. We don't know. We don't even have the rules in front of us.
Yeah,
so he does.
I everything I've heard, though, it didn't seem that way. Seems like it's more streamlined.
But I wanted to get
bloodier.
It is more streamlined, it is bloodier, it is faster, but that attack phase, the way he's playing it, and other people are playing it, is a clusterfuck. But beyond that, I've been struggling really. This is like the most expensive game you can play.
I'm sure there's way more expensive game. Golf is way more expensive.
I was going to clarify that and say tabletop miniature games. This is probably the most expensive one you could play. I'm sure there's rich people games that say, oh, no, actually, you could spend $5,000 on this replica.
My golden Star Wars, where all the characters are gold. Yeah.
But for us poor people, this is a very expensive game to play. And it's got me stressed out because I'm trying to figure out what kind of army I want to build. And as I watch people talk about this game on podcasts, on battle reports, or just chatting about Warhammer in general, it feels like the people that have been playing this game for years have everything. They've got all the races, they've got all the units, they're all just sitting on shelves, and they just like Magic the Gathering cards in a box, they just casually go over and put together a new list, and I'm playing Necrons today. It's like, dude, for me to even own Necrons, I gotta drop $300 or $400. So do I really want to play Necrons? I'm trying to figure out. I've been watching all these battle reports and looking at all these lists and the combos and the different units and how these things are played, and I'm trying to figure out what race I want to play, what race I want to go all in on for my first army and really build up an army. And I wanted your opinion on that too. Like, where are you at as far as the army that you'd like to build, maybe to take to a casual local tournament and throw some dice on the board and see what you can do as a tournament player? Like, what do you want to build?
I'm not sure if I'm going to be a tournament player.
You don't think even just down at the local
shop?
Just a casual local shop Saturday game, you know what I mean?
Not like a tournament.
But that's what I mean. On a Saturday where they do a tournament that's 5 or 6 hours long, and, you know, it's only, you know, sign up 20 people and have all those tables so everybody plays at once and only takes about 5 hours.
The only reason I'd sign up for that is if I really get into playing. I do a lot of this for the model building. That's actually helping me sleep, helping with my post-traumatic stress. So, I'm sticking with the starter kits and what can make the best out of what I'm going to get for the biggest bang for the buck, so to speak.
So right now what you've got is you've got a team of Blood Angels, Dark Angels,
and a team of Chaos Space Marines,
And where are you leaning as far as those? Do you think that you want to build more on?
With the armies, with the new starter kit, the biggest bang for the buck, there are Space Marines, and then there are Chaos.
So you can mix those together.
Yeah, you can mix those.
And are they still battle forged? Are they still, because they have to have one keyword in common?
Yeah.
And so chaos is
and space
Nurgle, and so the Chaos Space Marines that you have, Are they Khorne? Is that the god that they follow?
They fight under different gods, so they can't take the buffs. Like, my army will be overall weaker because they can't take the buffs from across the whole army. Like some of the, you know, when they all worship Khorne, they all can share.
They're buffed in a specific way, but it's still considered Battleforged, and you can still.
But I've heard of a lot of people from what I've been, you know, researching and stuff. You know, you're going to have 3 to 5 detachments. Well, in like a 2,000 point game, 3 detachments could be 3 like starter set forces. So, you know, I'm 2/3 of the way there from actually playing in these bigger tournaments. You know, I'm 100% there playing with my buddy Kevin Strange.
Right. But my question is, so in this 8th edition, when you build a Battleforged army that has keywords in common, mm-hmm. and you build them specifically, there are different ways you can build your detachments so that you get extra command points. If you're using Chaos Space Marines and Nurgle Space Marines...
Both have Chaos keywords.
And so you'll be able to build Battleforged, and you'll be able to do the detachments in such a way to gain
from extra... From my understanding of it.
Right.
Okay, like, so... What they did is apparently people were putting Orcs and Tyranids together.
Yeah.
Even though they're both Xenos. Well, they don't like that.
Yeah.
So they have to have keywords. And like the bigger ones, like the Astro Mechanicus and or the Astro Mechanicus and then the
Astro Militarium, is it?
Yeah. Those are all grouped in books, along with all the Space Marines are grouped in a book.
Right.
So from what I can gather, from what I've heard, that is if they're in the same book, they could be in the same army.
Right. Okay, that makes sense. So since I've got that little set from Battle for Vedros, I've got Space Marines, so I'll be able to put them with the Primaris Space Marines from the new set and have a little bit bigger of an army to go with there. Okay.
And that since they're just regular blue Space Marines, you can do them just out off the box, Ultramarines.
Right.
And from what I can see, that's the most efficient way to go. So, you know, especially with the box sets. Like... I'm pretty sure they're going to get real cheap on Amazon, the Dark Vengeance. So if you wanted to do the Chaos like you did, or talked about with Nurgle, you could have them backed up, from my understanding of it. Like,
So I'm still learning even what all the factions are. So with Chaos, you've got 4 gods. You've got Nurgle, Slaanesh, Tzeentch, and Khorne, right?
Yep.
And they all have their own different buffs that they get if you only take those specific units specific to that god. Into combat if you're Chaos. Not just if you take... You can have a Chaos army that's all 4 gods, but you don't get the buffs from having...
Yeah, just each unit gets the buff.
Right.
So if you have
They call it multi-god or mono-god when it comes to Chaos. And I guess that thing, it works the same way with the Primarchs for the Space Marines. Like, you can bring Space Wolves in with Primaris, but you don't get the buffs of just having Space Wolves or just having Primaris or whatever. And so you're not leaning any particular direction? You don't know...
I am making my Ultramarines for that case Dark Angels. So I'm at.
Are you going to buff up the Dark Angels over time, or do you care?
That's probably what I'm going to do. I'm going to end up painting a zillion of these things. So I'll probably end up with, you know, 8 years down the road, one from a whole army of each of the 4 that I have. Specific, or not match 3 because I'm going straight Dark Angel. But
just because you bought the set, or is there something about Dark Angel that you like?
All honesty, just because I bought the set, I had all those Dark Angels. But the more I started learning about the Dark Angels, their lore is, you know, everybody treats them like they're traitors, and but it was either them or the I can't remember the Fallen that's with them. One of them is good guys, one of them is bad guys, but nobody really knows. And I don't even know if the Fallen can fight, but yeah, there's a detachment that one of them turned on the other one. One of them may worship a Chaos God and just don't let everybody else know about it, and then the other one is the true. But everybody pretty much, I mean, if you watch any of these battle reports or any of this thing, anybody talks about, if you're not a Dark Angels player, they're always like traitor. So you're kind of a good guy and a traitor at the same time.
Interesting. That's cool.
I love how their detachments are set up. They're the first, is the way everybody refers to them. They were the Lionel Johnson, or L. Lion Johnson, their Primarch, wasn't the first one discovered, but he became a favorite. And when they made the Space Marine armies, they were the first unit, like, from what I've, my understanding of it.
They were the very first Space Marines?
They were the, it, during the Crusade, or the Horus Heresy, Horus specifically sent the Dark Angels away. And then, you know, that's what gets you with some of these armies when you start hearing it. They were sent away, and then the planet the dude was raised on, L. Lion Johnson, had, like, knights, like, and he got them all in, and some of them, including his best friend, basically, the guy that found him in the woods. He was raised like Tarzan. It's kind of like a Tarzan story. And brought him into this knight's thing, and then the Emperor came, and he was jealous and just killed him after they got back from this big, you know, debate, you know, like the Horus Heresy, just destroyed him, blasted him out of the sky when they returned to their home world, and it set them all off, and just some of the background stuff. And, you know, no matter who, what legion, you can't mix them really with any other Space Marine legion, because everybody either thinks they're a traitor, or like Space Wolves, they have to fight. It sounded like to the death, but once you got down further in the story, it was just a fist fight, but because they're fighting over who could kill somebody. So
they got to fight every time, huh?
And they got a black motorcycle. Their guys in black motorcycles. That helps.
That's cool. I've been struggling with who I want to start building off of first. I was really into Necrons at first. I was watching battle reports. I really liked the Necron units and how they played.
They're dirty cheaters now.
But I've kind of gotten a lot. People have always said they're overpowered and, you know, They're ridiculous.
They're just been the Poxwalkers.
They've been
somebody, or
you kill them, like, you keep bringing them back. But apparently they've nerfed them out quite a bit for 8th. And they were walking them out, nerfing them even more, even in 7. Apparently they started off in 7.
They had nerfed them in 7 from what I heard today on the podcast. They were daisy chaining them. Big long lines.
Daisy chaining the scarabs all the way to your line. And then doing close combat on round 1.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, they definitely needed nerfed a little bit. But for some reason, I've kind of gone soft on them. I've kind of gone cold on them. Like, I'm not super excited about collecting Necrons anymore. And I've moved on. There's a few other units that I got that I've gotten passionate about. I've really gotten into Nurgle, especially because I'm getting this set with a bunch of Nurgle in it. But
and since they're the new hotness, you're going to see a lot.
Yeah, there'll be a lot of stuff to buy from them, a lot of new models, a lot of cool stuff, a lot of exciting things.
There'll be a starter kit, so there's 2/3 of an army or a full tournament level army.
For a while, I was really into, I was really getting into Skitarii. I really like the way their units look. I like the fact that they worship machines and mechanical stuff, and they're really nasty looking, cyborg looking, like cyborg monks. They just look really cool, but they're apparently not very strong. And I've watched a few battle reports with them, and they always get killed. Mm-hmm. And their Skitarii doesn't have enough units to really flesh out its own army, so you kind of put them in with Astra Mechanicus. Mm-hmm. And which is fine, they're cool too, but they just, again, I started to kind of fall out of passion with them. But there's one, it's really funny because it comes down to one unit. There's one unit that I kept seeing in combat that I thought was really fucking cool. And that's the fucking Pink Horrors. You know what the Pink Horrors are?
Yeah, the...
Where you kill them and they split into Blue Horrors. Yeah. And in 7th it was Brimstone Horrors. And I don't think the Brimstone Horrors were a thing. I think that's a brand new thing. I don't think those were in 7th. But even, you know, and people abuse this stuff. I watched a battle report where a guy was able to put, like, 150 units on the table because of the way it's...
They changed that in the new rules.
They did. You have to buy what you're going to spend.
If you have a guy that can do it,
You have to buy it even before you summon it. People are like, that's fucking stupid. But it's because they were trying to bring 150 fucking units on the table.
The game. There's demons that can
so you
bring
would end up
demons,
having, like, 10 or 12,000 points worth of stuff in a 2,000-point game by using all those demon summoning things. So that doesn't bother me. Even though they've quote-unquote nerfed the Pink Horrors, I don't think that's really a nerf. I think it just makes them fair. They still split. They still split into Blue Horrors, and the Blue Horrors split into Brimstone, and I think that's cool. I started looking at some of the other units. It turns out that the Pink Horrors belong to Tzeentch. They worship Tzeentch. Mm-hmm. So they're a Chaos Tzeentch army. Mm-hmm. And so I started looking more into Tzeentch, and I started looking at the different... and they're heavy, heavy psychers. Like, magic is their thing. Mm-hmm. And they have Tzeentch is a heavy unit in Age of Sigmar. Mm-hmm. They do. Most of these units are swappable. You can play the exact same. You can play Pink and Blue Horrors in Sigmar. You can play Pink and Blue Horrors in Warhammer 40K. So I was looking at the different units. And I was like, these are cool. These are cool. These are cool. And then I realized something last night that I didn't know before, and that's the Thousand Suns. Yeah. They are the Space Marines that worship Tzeentch. And they are like blue and gold.
You know the background?
No, I don't know much of the background.
Magnus,
yet.
Their Primarch, is the one who fought the Emperor first.
Oh, really?
And left a chink in his armor.
Oh, and interesting.
Yeah, he's Horus's. I mean, they're all brothers, but he's the one that was like Horus's brother.
They were a team.
Yeah.
And so yeah, they really good friends, so Magus and they kind of look like, for those that don't follow 40K and are still for some reason listening to this podcast 40 minutes in.
Yeah. they tuned us out. We got all nerdy about
They look like Egyptians. Mm-hmm. They're like blue and gold Egyptian armies, and so they've got the Space Marine armor on, but they've got these big Egyptian pharaoh hoods that they wear that are blue and gold. And I'm looking at this going, you know what? I think this might be the one. Because with Thousand Suns and all the Tzeentch demons, I think I could get into that. I think there's such a variety.
Fight with Nurgle.
Yeah, because they're chaos, right? Mm-hmm. Are Thousand Suns chaos? Mm-hmm. See, I think that's what I'm going to do. So my gut right now, and again, I've gone from Necrons to Skitarii to Nurgle, but I think I might actually go all in and build my first army separate from the starter sets. As the Tzeentch army and the Thousand Suns, I think I might do that. How do you feel about that?
Oh, I think it's badass. I want to do just their Primarch,
Magus. Yeah, he's a cool. Yeah, he's a cool looking motherfucker. He's like a red demon thing with blue wings. And
yeah,
they're really cool. And there's a bunch of other demons that they can set. Like the Khorne demons look like your standard Satan and demons from Christian hell. But Tzeentch demons look just cool. They're like bird. A lot of their stuff is like bird oriented. It's all blue. It's all shades of blue.
It's those manta ray looking things.
Yeah, the screamers. Yeah. Those things are cool. They got another unit called the flamers that are really cool looking things. And I've watched a couple battle reports with the Thousand Suns and Tzeentch, and they seem to be pretty. They can fight pretty good. Nobody complains that they're OP, but nobody complains that they're weak either. It seems like they're a pretty well balanced army, so I might go with it.
That would work because you could, you know, the whole point of why I decided to do this is because I knew I was going to end up getting two starter boxes once I figured out this helps me sleep, wears my brain out enough so I can sleep. And I was like, okay, thankfully the next starter box stacks on top. They're not pure armies. I can make, you know, they've come with the stickers for the Dark Angels for the. Ultramarines side, but at least chaos, and they're both chaos bad guys too. And I was like, oh, that's cool. But with the Nurgle coming out, man, it's going to be hard with having a third of a Nurgle army that you can fight in a tournament with.
Yeah,
with some of the shit. Have you seen any of the shit that's coming out for the Ultramarines?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they have a hover tank.
Oh, that's cool.
It looks pretty badass, and the new Dreadnought looks pretty badass.
Yeah, I saw the new Dreadnought. People are tripping about that. Yeah. That's pretty cool. And I guess Dreadnoughts are almost being used like vehicles now. They really changed up how the Dreadnought
works. No, they said they finally put them in the coolness that they were originally back into it. So that looks like it's going to be fun.
Yeah. All right, well, I think we've nerded out.
Yeah, and if there was we had any female fans wanting us, we've scurried them away too.
Right. Well, so by next week we'll be able to talk about where we've gotten in our painting and assembling of our new box set. I can't wait to get it. Oh yeah, you're going out of town.
So. I'm being in Jamaica next week.
We'll have a couple more phony podcasts.
Phonies, yeah. Wow, this is awesome. Our Warhammer stuff.
Yep.
But I'll be back the weekend after, I think.
Cool. All right. Well, gang. Got a Computer Face Part 5.
Yay.
Next week we get into we get back to the the apocalypse, and some danger awaits our new motley crew of survivors. Computer Face, along with his new friends, who they're not really friendly with him at all, but yeah.
Kind of dicks, actually.
His new friends. Big purple dicks. All right, gang. Till next week, remember to keep
reading.
All music featured on the Reading to Strangers podcast provided by Kevin MacLeod at Incompetech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0. http://creativecommons.org/license/by/3.0/